podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
We are live, boys. We are live. Arsenal have just beaten Luton. It's late night in the UK. I'm joined by Matt Candela and Johnny Cochran, and we are here on The Whistle live exclusively just for our patrons. How are you doing, guys?
Not bad at all. I mean, when you want to file something under just what the doctor ordered, a 2-0 comfortable win at home, no new injuries, half the team rotated out, lots of confidence for players who haven't played much. I mean, it was brilliant. It worked out brilliantly for us. We couldn't win the league today. It was never about that. It was about a continuation result. And we got the job done. Delighted.
Matt, did you watch it while working some spreadsheets in the background, doing a little casual client meeting or two? Or were you glued to the TV, absolutely fearing for your life that this could be the end of our season?
The only business being done was by Arsenal on the pitch. That was extremely pleasing to the eye. Absolutely no drama. We had to win. We did win. On to the next. 8 to go.
Fantastic. All right, boys. I'll get the music going and let's just crack right into this. Where's the goddamn music? Oh, here you are.
Mirror man, mirror man. You twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am. Mirror man.
Good morning and welcome to a new edition of the Arsenal Opinion Podcast. It is a professional win that we're going to be talking about today. Arsenal have just beaten Luton Town 2-0 at the Emirates. It was a professional performance. Arteta rotated hard. We brought back the bacon, and it's a good job too because Manchester City have just gone 3-1 up against Unai Emery, who I knew was not going to do me a favour because of all of the bad things that I wrote about him back in the day. I'm joined on the show this week by Johnny Cochran, man like Matt Candela, and we are going to come with these podcasts thick and fast all month. Remember, if you want them live, patreon.com/TheArsenalOpinion. You get 7 days free, and it's so much more fun being in a live chat room. Johnny, Matt, how are we feeling right now?
Yeah, I mean, look... It's now into that nervy time of the season where you've just got to keep the ball rolling. This is Momentum FC right now. And, you know, the one thing I'm going to save some for my hottest of takes. I don't want to go too early. But, you know, we are playing a game of fine margins here. And at the end of the day, when you get wins, you cannot be disappointed. And when you get wins, when you've been able to rotate that much, you've got to be more than pleased. It was a fantastic day at the office for Arteta and the boys.
Matt, when you were younger, in your 20s, Arsenal were doing things like title challenges every season. Do you feel like a dad that's just got divorced and lost it all and he's experiencing title runs for the first time and you don't really know what to do, how to dress, how to feel?
I think they're different now. I really do. I think there used to be so many more twists and turns in a title run. Whereas now it's any mistake is fatal. You know, that I watched Arsenal win titles where 78 points, 85 points, 83 points wins you it. And, you know, you can drop points and then the other team drops points and it's just nip and tuck all the way. But we're up against an absolute juggernaut in Manchester City who we know are absolutely capable of winning every single game between now and the end of the season. So it's different. Maybe I'm a bit like a divorced dad who's just found the apps. It's like, it's same but different.
You're like, I've got money. I'll put a picture of the Ferrari out there. All right, boys, we've got an action-packed show. People are just gathering in the room. So let's get into our favourite tradition called...
Hottest of Takes.
Hottest of Takes.
The Hottest of Takes.
The AOP Hottest of Takes. Make it spicy.
Macandela, this week's Hottest of Takes goes to you. Where are you taking it?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of comparisons to last year, and I'm going to do it again today. We had a massive game last season against Liverpool. We drew, and then the next game, we were cruising at 2-0 against West Ham and absolutely threw it away. And that was really one of the most fatal wounds in the title race. Those dropped 2 points when Saka missed the penalty to put us 3-2 up in the second half. Today, absolutely no mistake. 2-0, but kept the professionalism, kept it tight. And the biggest difference for me, and it really brings me back to the old 1-0 to the Arsenal days, is we are so strong defensively. We're just so strong. We don't look like conceding goals. We don't look like shipping stupid errors. So that for me is the big difference between last season. And when you don't concede, there is almost a sense of inevitability when you're able to score, in the same way that it used to be with Arsenal back in the George Graham era. And I'm beginning to get those vibes again. Once we're in front, no one is pegging us back. And that's what it felt like today. It felt like the game ended when we were able to make the breakthrough. And that gives me a lot of hope for the rest of the season.
Johnny, Matt's feeling hopeful. I don't know whether Matt was feeling so hopeful on Monday when he wrote that dreaded spreadsheet. How are you feeling after that game? What's your heights of takes?
Yeah, Matt, did you have us beating Luton in your doom-mongering little spreadsheet that you had?
2-1.
Oh, okay. Okay. There you go. Goals against us in that spreadsheet. That's a shame. Anyway, so we're obviously going to focus on this actual game throughout the podcast, but I want to try to, for my hottest of takes, try to put this in the context of the overall league title challenge. What this game did for me today is it reassured me that we are going to be able to take out the trash when we need to at home. Just if you're a poor team and you turn up the Emirates, you're going to get done over. Luton, they're plucky. They'll remain competitive. They've done it with everyone this year. And you know, in some ways, I quite admire what they have put out. But overall, we weren't there to mess around. We're putting out B teams and they were dominant. So that placates me a little bit and my worries a little bit in terms of, are we going to slip up against, you know, your equivalent of Southampton's this year? No, we're not. They're just going to get handled. I feel much more confident about that. The issue is, Matt, you know, alluded to it, but let's get realistic. We're in the fiercest of title fights where these guys might just go unbeaten. And I have been worried, I said it a few weeks ago, that I thought Liverpool are more ominous than what some people... Everyone keeps going, oh, they'll drop points. Why? The fact is they might win every game extremely narrowly, and City and Arsenal go ahead and start pumping teams 4-5-0. But you don't need to win every game 5-0. You just need to keep winning if you're in front. And so I say all that to say this. My hottest of takes is, the way I see it going now, I do think that Liverpool will drop more points if we keep the pressure up. But I do think that out of the games that we have left, there are the games that everyone kind of concedes are up for grabs. Your Tottenham's, your Old Trafford. I think we are going to have to win at least one of those games. At least we aren't. I think we're actually going to have to win both of them. I think we're going to have to go to Tottenham and win if we're going to win the league. And I think we can do it, especially if we can keep dealing with teams like this, like Luton at home. But I just think that the margin for error is so slim now that we may well have to go on our very own, you know, unbeaten run, 100% run ourselves if we want to take hold of the title this year.
Love it. My hottest of takes is the rotation is always the right answer. It is better to live to fight another day than break an entire squad and have what happened to us last season. Today signaled an evolution in the way that Mikel Arteta thinks. He rotated hard. He left some big players on the bench. And the thing that really spoke to me about the game is when players that haven't had a start all season put in good performances, you know that the culture is strong. Mikel Arteta spoke before the game and he said, you know, some of the biggest games in history that have changed clubs' directions forever have come from players that haven't really been involved. And I'm thinking back to Gareth Bale and some of the involvements that he had for Madrid. Whilst he didn't change the direction or the history of Madrid, he popped up after not having a lot of minutes, after having difficult seasons and impacted games in a really positive way. And I thought there was some great performance out there that we'll talk about today. But for me, the big narrative is when you've got a big squad, lean into it and trust players because they can do a good job. And Smith Rowe was a little bit of a worry. I didn't sell my stocks in him before the game. Matt Candela did. And I'm feeling good about that because I'm going through the roof. I'm going to the moon with Emile Smith Rowe. But the only thing just left me being like, why couldn't he have had more involvement for the rest of the season? But we will get on to that. All right, let's move on to the first topic of conversation. And this is called the Smith Impact. And we're going to go right to Matt Candela. He didn't even want to talk about Emile Smith Rowe before the whistle. He'd written him off. He'd abandoned him like a kitten at Christmas, put him in a bag and thrown him into the river. And then Smith got his chance and he put in a good performance. What I want to know, Matt, is are you rushing down to the Thames to pull that kitten out of the bag and give him another chance? Because I thought the performance was good. I'd love to get your take on how it felt seeing the Smith back out there doing his thing.
Well, first of all, you know I've always been an Emile Smith Rowe fanboy right from the beginning. Probably my favourite player at one point. I loved everything about him. And me turning my back on him was less about me and more about Mikel Arteta, because I thought that it was fanciful to see him starting a game between now and the end of the season with the stakes so high when he hadn't been playing games when fundamentally the stakes had been less. So it was a massive shock to see him on the team sheet. I think it's testament to how well he's been doing in training. Mikel Arteta alluded to him deserving more chances. It sounded like Dubai was a really positive experience for him. Delighted to see him in the game today. And I thought first half, he was really sharp, really dangerous. I like also the positions he was occupying. It was less of a sort of traditional left eight and more of just a forward. And he was sort of slotting into that pocket between the left wing and the striker. And I think having Havertz there helped him. I think he had a really nice link-up play with Odegaard, with Trossard on that side. So it was really, really positive. Second half, I thought he faded. He really did. He looked tired. But, you know, it bodes well. I think he can be an impact player. You mentioned players who have changed the directions of clubs. The big example, as much as I hate to say it, is Manchester United with Sheringham and Solskjaer. You know, they won the Champions League for Manchester United and they got them through some tricky ties and big matches. But fundamentally, it was York and Cole all season. So who's going to be our Sheringham? Who's going to be our Solskjaer? Maybe it can be Emile Smith Rowe. There's still a moment. And I really like the way Arteta talked about it. So great to get him on. Great to get minutes in the legs. Great to make him feel like he's part of the squad. He's a good finisher. He should have scored today. He did well. I don't think they were bad finishes. I just think the goalkeepers always seem to put off brilliant saves against Smith Rowe. Every game he plays, whether it's 2 minutes or 20 or a full 90, he's getting shots away and testing the goalkeeper. So I feel like there could be still a big moment for Emile Smith Rowe between now and the end of the season.
That's great to hear. Absolutely deflecting your stock sales there. Johnny, you back Smith all the way. Could you be his biggest fan on the podcast now? Maybe. What did you make of the performance? And do you think it will influence the way Mikel Arteta thinks about using him for the rest of the season?
Yeah, mate, I'm buying up that Smith stock like Dogecoin right now, okay? Matt Candela is just flogging it out and I've just cleaned it all up, you know what I mean? Influencing the market out here nowadays. Look, I think it was a really, really good performance from Smith, but I do my ratings and I don't want to jump ahead to those kind of things, but usually I would knock down a player based on things like giving the ball away and, you know, misplacing passes and things like that. But I think with a player who's been out for this long and is trying to adapt to new directions, new roles, and hasn't had much playing time, I'm always going to give them a little bit more leeway. And I'm definitely going to give them more leeway if they have made game-altering interactions within the game. And that's what he did. So let's talk about it. The fact is, first of all, when you're trying to get a foothold in the game, he steps in with his excellent pressing, breaks the ball up, wins the ball straight to Kai, and that creates the Odegaard goal. That's excellent. So a key intervention. And then for him, with that lovely little run in that channel Matt was talking about, And then to cut back and to somehow find a way to nutmeg Reece Nelson from there was impressive. It really was impressive. We won't talk about Reece's lack of finishing in that moment. But what I like, if I can distill it down to one thing, is when there are players, and I don't feel like this is, you know, kind of putting Emile Smith Rowe down, but he's a squad player for us right now. It feels, you know, we're at that level. At one point, he used to be like, oh, he could break in, but he is a squad player these days. And what I want from our squad players is when they come on against Luton Town to show that they are better than anyone at Luton Town. Emile Smith Rowe put on a show today and showed that he could rock easily against any of the teams maybe outside the top six and feel like he was better than anyone there. That's what I saw today. And it's that kind of class is permanent, form is temporary, you work your way in. So for him to come out and show that much fight and influence the game in the way that he does, because you have to influence the game if you're playing in those positions, if you're filling in for Saka, filling in for Ødegaard or Martinelli, these are all game-changing players. And he stepped up to the plate today and took responsibility. So I think it's only right that he gets the plaudits that he deserves for his relentless attitude, his hunger, and overall his guts to put in that performance today. Well done.
Yeah, I think that we should probably give Saka some credit for the rebirth of Smith Rowe. He took all of the pressure of Smith Rowe's Nando's addiction off of his shoulders and put them on his with his own secret sauce. And Mikel Arteta seems to have forgotten about it. I thought it was quite brave of Arteta to roll with Emile today because his favourite is Fabio Vieira. So I thought that he would be getting the nod. You know, we said that in the pregame. I said, wouldn't it be nice for Smith Rowe to get a run out? Had no idea that he would actually get the minutes. And he got the minutes and he did really well with them. And I'm really pleased for him. And I do hope that he gets consideration. He's could be good off the bench. He could definitely fill in for Ødegaard if there's a tweak there. It's just a shame in games like that. It's like the long goodbye. He's putting himself in the shop window now. And the most important thing that he can do for the rest of the season is stay fit. But it was a good performance. I hope he enjoyed it, and I'm just gutted that I wasn't at the Emirates to see him because I don't think he'll be there next season. All right, let's move on to the next topic of conversation, Thomas Partey. I think we all agreed that the one non-negotiable was that Thomas Partey would start. I don't think any of us really had Declan Rice down as the full guy in this situation, and I don't think any of us thought that Jorginho would be benched as well. But Thomas Partey started his first game in about 1,000 years and he put in a shift. Johnny, how important can Thomas Partey be for the run-in and what did you make of his performance out there? Was it the Thomas Partey of old?
Well, there were certainly flashes of that. I don't think he is fully up to form of the levels that we know he can get to, but I kind of wouldn't necessarily expect him to be there. That's why you start him against Luton, because you don't need Thomas Partey at 100% to be able to get the result done. 90%, that should be enough. One thing that I will flag up is something that I have been saying for a while, and one of the reasons why I was like, I think Thomas Partey has to start, is if there's going to be, I believe, a bit of a synergy between Thomas Partey playing and Zinchenko playing. And obviously, Thomas Partey being a replacement for Jorginho in that mould. Because whilst they did it towards the end, I don't think that you would start games with Jorginho and Zinchenko. There's a lack of pace there that still would worry you and concern you. That's two players who wouldn't be able to run. So I do think that when Thomas Partey's in there, Zinchenko's more likely to play, and I think they'll dovetail quite nicely. So I was pleased to see that they both came in and did well. But what did we see? We saw some lovely little bits of, you know, the turn that he does when he receives it off the back line and just instantly turns and then sends the whole world for a dummy. That was there. There were some nice incisive passes. Of course, a few moments where he maybe miscontrolled the ball or didn't necessarily know where he was going, but that all comes the more you're playing. And all of a sudden he's had two appearances, one of them a start. He showed you that he couldn't even get through the whole game because obviously he's not, you know, fully there yet. But there was nothing I saw today that would make me worried about seeing him playing some minutes against Brighton as well. Like, we, at the end of the day, whatever way you shake this out, Thomas Partey's been had a layoff for a long time. So, of course, we don't want to re-aggravate the injury, but we're not worried whether he can get enough breath in his lungs. Like, the guy should be good to go for a few games as long as we're managing that injury. So, positive performance, and I would expect it, that we keep seeing a fair bit of Thomas Partey in this run-in if we can get through this initial injury, including in the Champions League.
Matt, with a bit of a Thomas Partey memory refresher, do you think there's anything that he gives the side that maybe Declan Rice doesn't? Do you notice any differences?
Yeah,
on the positive note, sorry.
For me, verticality, that's the big thing that he does, because he can break the lines with that. He makes it look so easy, but you realise it's not, because no one else does it or can do it. And suddenly it changes the whole way we play, because when he does that and gives a man in space, time, specifically Ødegaard, suddenly there's a lot more through balls to strikers. Like, we don't play a lot of, or we haven't traditionally this season played a lot of just straight through balls, the sort of type that Haaland gobbles up. But today we were playing a ton, because Ødegaard just found, and Smith Rowe to an extent, found themselves in space with the lines broken. So that's the big thing that he does. I think he's phenomenal offensively, which is strange because I've always thought of him as a defensive midfielder, but I feel like his real skill is in transition, in when we have the ball and we're moving forward. I think he can actually be a little bit suspect defensively, which is strange because he looks so imposing. He's such a big unit. He's so athletic, but he's plays quite a high risk game, but he's super tight on the ball. We've been talking all season about Rice and Partey was supposed to be the secret unlock for the season. Then Jorginho came in and unsettled that. But I do wonder if Rice and Partey together in midfield will have a role to play between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, great points, guys. I love having Thomas Partey available in the midfield mixer. I still think Jorginho sits ahead of him for what he's been offering the side this season. And but he put in a good performance out there today. Didn't show himself up. He did lose some balls, but I think he always does, because he's quite a high risk player and he's feeling his way back into the game. But I think having him in the Champions League to see out a game could be absolutely massive. Him trying to chase a game could also be massive. Him in a game against a deep block side could be useful for the Brighton game at the weekend. So it's just nice to have versatile, high quality players that sit in and around the squad. It's kind of what we've got in Tomiyasu as well. Like, they can come in, they can do a job, they're winners. So exciting news on that front. And let's hope that he can remain injury free. It's probably his last season as well at Arsenal.
Because we've got Bayern and Brighton, I think you've got to make your selections for Brighton with an eye on Bayern. And so if Jorginho is going to play against Bayern, which I presume he is, then it wouldn't be surprising to see Partey start again on the weekend, I think.
I wouldn't be surprised if Partey starts against Bayern. I mean, they have got a lot of athletes in their team, some very good players who can, get through on a break. I know Jorginho offers you control, but...
I don't think they've got athletes in their midfield, Johnny. I think their problem this season is they're quite slow.
Like, no, but I'm thinking people like Musiala breaking from deep. You know, he's quick. If Sane's running in, remember, whoever is going to be holding the likes of Jorginho offers great protection. But in terms of if we do get turned, I feel like Thomas Partey's athleticism might come in handy if he's not being asked to do it all on his own, because obviously Declan's going to be running the show. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see Thomas Partey getting some Champions League action. But then again, and I also think that these games are twinned quite well, because I think Brighton and Bayern in some ways offer a similar kind of task, in the sense that you're coming up against good technical units who are going to have a tactical plan to go against us. They're not going to park the bus, either of them, but we're not just going to be able to walk through them. And so with that in mind, I feel like, you know, Arteta could go in either direction, but I wouldn't be surprised if it shook out that Thomas Partey was getting some serious Champions League minutes as well.
I like it. This is, when are we ever on April 3rd talking about opportunities that we have in the squad to rotate. Not since we've been doing the podcast, seriously. That's a fact. Just want to say hello to Canut 4563A, Wooders Inc., Adriano, Carsten Meyerhill, and Paz of the Cat. That's a great name. That's a great name. And let's move on to the next topic. Let's go, Johnny. Let's go with Kai Dive. Kai Havertz and his bookings were hot on the agenda on the AOP before the whistle. He got booked for diving. He's going to miss the Brighton game at the weekend with a one-match suspension. The big question on the lips of all of us is, did he mean to do that? Did he throw the game so he'd be extra fit for Bayern? Did the club assess that this was probably the game to miss? Johnny, what do you think?
Well, I don't know if he threw it. To be honest, I think Kai has that kind of spate in him where sometimes he can kind of lose his head a little bit in a way that Gabriel used to, like last year you would see it. It's not like he goes completely rogue, but one of the things I'm starting to really see more and more is what a competitor Kai Havertz is. He's not some guy because I think we've been snake bitten by Mesut Ozil's performances in the past, and the fact that they're both quite languid, we could sit there and think that Kai was somehow not, you know, not involved and flings his arms around. He's not. He is fierce. He's a fierce competitor. And when he can't get his own way, when he can't do the thing, when he gets frustrated, you're likely to see reactions one way or the other. Sometimes those reactions lead to goals or goal-scoring actions, you know. Sometimes it leads to a dive. Sometimes it leads to a two-footed lunge challenge when you could get sent off in the first half. You know, it's something that he has to manage. But in the same note, that is exactly the kind of player where I think that, you know, classic cliche of you wouldn't want to take it out of the player, otherwise you'd have half the player. It is that competitive nature that makes him so effective. And so it was a bit of stupidity when you look at the grand scheme of things. But ultimately, if you look at, dare I say, it's not an increasing level of difficulty with these games, but the way we are with a league title running, it seems like an increasing level of importance. Every time we take to the field, the next game's the most important one. You know, the next ones we've got to win. And so, Brighton, you would be forgiven for thinking that it's going to be a tough game either way. But if Kai was to miss it, based on the form we are in right now and the fact that we've had some players rotate out, we'd still fancy ourselves, you know, to have a good chance of getting a result. It's not like it's Kai or bust, particularly when you've got another competition to think about in the sense that we're going to be playing Bayern Munich. And maybe based on the way that the players have been rotated, Kai would have been rested anyway for the Brighton game because Saka got a rest, Rice did. Kai just plays all the time and he'll play against Bayern. So maybe it was coming anyway. And if that is the case, then maybe it's smart to get these suspensions out of the way. But I'm also seeing, I saw on a tweet earlier that if Havertz he receives a yellow card against Brighton and Aston Villa, he'll face a two-game suspension. So I don't even know if he is definitely bad. Is that been confirmed?
Yeah, they reset on match day 32.
Right.
But look, he needs a rest at some point. He can't play every game between now and the end of the season. So it has to happen at some point. I thought that he may have got a rest today and Gabby Jesus would have started. And then I thought you need him more in away games where you can be under pressure and look for an out ball more versus at home where I felt like this would have been a good game for Gabby Jesus to get a feel for goals again, especially on his birthday. But it wasn't to be. I thought the dive was stupid. I think he dives too much. That's not the first time. He was lucky not to get sent off against Brentford for a dive. I think Arteta was frustrated about it. Pulled him off straight after. Because it's just dumb. And I think the great thing about this team is we don't do many dumb things anymore. We used to do dumb things. We used to have players who do dumb things, like passing it to the opposition inside the first 2 minutes and giving a goal when you're already under pressure and doing stuff like that. Gabriel used to do dumb stuff. So we keep it to a minimum, but this was dumb. because he's given us one less option. And even if he was going to be rested on the weekend, if it's one all or you're 1-0 down with 10 minutes to go, Kai Havertz is the man you're going to look to just get something on a ball in the mixer. Now we don't have that option. So that's my only frustration for the night. And hopefully you can learn from it, because 10 bookings for a striker is dumb. It's just dumb.
Oh, getting a little bit of slander for Kai Havertz there. Yeah, it doesn't feel smart, but if this was tactical, I'm all for it. And I think if there's a game that he can miss, I don't think we're going to need his beastly physicality against Brighton in the same way that we would against maybe an Aston Villa. So it's a loss for the weekend, but I'm sure that we can make it up. And hopefully that gives an opportunity to someone like Jesus to come in and put in a good performance. You know, notable that he didn't get a start today. So he must be under consideration for the weekend. Well, he definitely is now, right? Okay, let's move on to Reece Nelson. Reece Nelson got £100,000 a week contract at the end of last season because he would have gone on a free transfer. He has not had a lot of starts this season. And I thought in this game, he didn't really get a lot of love. It didn't look like the team truly trusted him out there today. He nearly got a goal, but he ran over the ball and Luton Town got their own goal. I wanted to get your take on his position in the squad, really. And, you know, there were a few people on the Discord that were saying, no, it's okay. You know, like Saka just needs a vibes person backing him up. And I'm not sure that I agree with that. I think that we need someone better. Makandela, what did you make of the Reece performance out there today? Is it good to have vibes people in the squad, or can we afford that at this level?
I think we're in phase three, Arteta said. We're not even in phase four, let alone phase five. And sometimes we go back to phase one. But Reece Nelson is a phase two player. Well, he was a phase one player because he started in Mikel Arteta's first game. Today, I think you really saw the drop off. When he's come on as a sub, he's looked way more impactful. I think maybe some of it was down to Luton's setup because they were man-marked. They were sort of going man for man, which maybe gave him a little bit less of an opportunity to hug the touchline and play the traditional Saka role. But Trossard had his pullback on toast all day. And Reece Nelson, I can't even recount him taking the man on. Some of that must have been down to instruction. Maybe it was a little bit more about control because it was a very un-Reece-like performance. But we're not all clamouring here saying that we're desperate for him to get more minutes. It looked like it wasn't inspirational in any way. That said, we got the win. We got a 90-minute rest for Bukayo Saka. So in that sense, you could argue he absolutely did his job. So 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10. Johnny, is 6 out of 10 good enough against Luton? Do you need to be showing more? Do you think that it was clear today why he doesn't get a lot of minutes? And who is going to buy him?
Well, I won't even give you my ratings because that is content that is exclusive for Patreon members of the Arsenal Opinion. You'll be hearing that tomorrow. But I certainly would echo some of the themes of what Matt was saying. I think there has to be a clear distinction at times between the kind of performance that Emile Smith-Rowe puts in out there when he's had less game time than Reece Nelson overall anyway. And Reece Nelson, who's, you know, familiar with the setup, the role that's being asked of him. I agree, like, he was certainly drifting inside a hell of a lot more than what you would expect him to. But the fact that he was getting no joy, you know, in those situations was a little bit alarming. You should, if you're an Arsenal player, be able to, you know, take on and outclass a Luton team who are workmanlike, but nothing more than that. That's, you know, at the end of the day, Ross Barkley is having a great season and he looked very good again today. And apart from that, there's a lot of ordinary players there. They're just men running around, faceless men. Great, you'll be back in the Championship. Don't deserve this league anymore. And if you, as an Arsenal player, even a squad player, cannot go onto that pitch and show that there's a class difference, like Leandro Trossard did, then I dare say that your future is not going to remain at the club. Yeah, you might be a couple of phases past your sell-by date, you know, your use-by date, but I thought that there were some positive moments. I thought that he did get about and, you know, hurry. But at this level, we're going for a league title. We need more than just players running around. And there is an absolute drop-off. We know how important Saka is. And that's why, to be honest, we should all feel very relieved that we've managed to get through a game like that, which is against plucky opponents. But we've let our best attacking player have a rest, which was sorely needed. And someone like a Reece Nelson wasn't ultimately asked to do too much because he couldn't even score a goal from 6 yards out. He had to dummy it and let it bounce off a Luton defender. But there you go. So certainly not a spectacular performance, but, you know, could have been worse.
Yeah, I think could have been worse kind of sums up his season for me so far. He's not an impactor off the bench because he's come off the bench plenty of times. He's not very good when he has to play in a very specific structure, doesn't have a lot of pressing capabilities. And I just don't think he gets the system. He feels a little bit like in the Fabio Vieira mold. Obviously, there is some talent there. Otherwise, he wouldn't be under contract with Arsenal. But I just don't think he's going to realise his full potential at this level. That's my personal opinion. All right. Let's move on to one of the last topics. Captain Ødegaard at it again. The man is made out of the same material as Declan Rice. He plays every single game. He led from the front. You never see a drop-off. He never looks at opposition and says, I'm too good for this. He set the tempo again today. Johnny, what did you make of Captain Ødegaard? You called him the orchestrator last week. What do you make of him today?
Yeah, Captain Captain. Listen, I don't know what to say about this guy. This was a sensational performance. Really, really high level. I'm not going to keep relitigating the fact that I've inspired this turnaround in form for him. Everyone who listens to the AOP knows that now, so let's just take that as read. But what we're seeing from this guy now is, if there were any questions about, you know, and I'll use it as a positive more than a negative, should someone like Declan Rice take over as captain because he leads on the pitch? This performance says everything you need to know about what Martin Ødegaard does. It was a heroic performance. And it starts from when you get that opportunity in the box because of harrying that you are, you know, at least setting the example with. When you get the ball, it gets squared to you in the box. No more jinking inside, step overs, Alexi Aleb. We do not need another one. It's in front of me, whack. What a world-class finish that is. That looks, you know, in real time, a lot easier than what it is. That is an absolutely disgusting finish from a technician who is purring right now. I thought throughout the game, he led by example. The hounding that he's doing, the amount of running he's getting through. And the other thing that I wanted to kind of, you know, end on with Ødegaard is this. There's a word that you don't often associate with a guy like Ødegaard because he is seen as more of an artist, is aggression. But this guy is so aggressive. And it's not, you know, aggression when you think about football is sometimes you're thinking about your Keane and your Vieira, your Graham Souness or, you know, whoever else. The fact is that you're not necessarily thinking about someone who is willing to hound you aggressively. It's not all Vinnie Jones leg-breaking, X-rated challenges that make you, you know, an aggressive player. Someone who, as soon as you get the ball, I'm on you. Literally rat on a Mars bar stuff, all over you, panicking you. And then when he gets put in those same situations, he's cool as a cucumber because he can dribble past you in a phone box. I thought this performance was absolutely at the top drawer. For me, I understand why Emile Smith Rowe might get some people's man of the match, but the real man of the match, if we don't take away a kind of qualifier that Emile's been out for a while, is Ødegaard. He was a mile ahead of anyone else, I thought. Just unbelievable performance.
Matt Candela, what did you make of Martin Ødegaard? Is he getting close to being player of the season?
I think he's got in with a real shout. I think if we go and win the league, a big part of it will be down to Martin Ødegaard's form over the next 8 games. He's got this sort of steely determination amidst the movie star looks. And we used to have a great player whose nickname was the Iceman. And that was the person with Dennis Bergkamp. And I think when you see Martin Ødegaard, he is another Iceman. He is like Johnny said, cool as a cucumber, but ice runs through that guy's veins. You would not want to go up against him. He's got everything. And statistically, I think he's got 7 goals, 6 assists, which may be less than last season, but I think we've seen a big evolution in Martin Odegaard, because I think he's become a leader this season. I think last season we're like, he's captain, but is it because he's sort of teacher's pet? Is that sort of the reason? Is it because he's good tactically and can communicate Mikel Arteta's instructions? Whereas now, I think it's because, yes, maybe he can do those things, but there's also so much more. He leads by example. He puts the team on his back when it needs him. It cannot be easy for him to be playing as much football as he's playing, but he's doing it because he is another player in the squad who does not have an understudy, does not have someone who can do what he does. He's going to have to do it every game. And I'm sure Mikel Arteta, in his very Arteta way, will go, you're the captain, get on with it and deliver. That's what captains do. And by God, he's doing that.
Yeah, agree with those comments. He sets the tone for Arsenal, and having him on those pitch and on those games where it is easy to take foot off the gas. And to be honest, like, Arsenal did play in first gear tonight, and there was a bit of complacency in the first half. Sometimes a game is so easy that you can lose sight that, you know, Luton have caused some problems. I think it's the 18th. They've scored in 18 games in a row, and we just stopped them with a clean sheet. We narrowed them to 0.23 XG, which is phenomenal. But I do think having tone setters in the squad, like a Odegaard, like a Kai Havertz as well, I just think it goes such a long way. And it's something that we lacked, certainly in the dark years of Arsene Wenger, where you'd have players like Samir Nasri, Alex Song, Thomas Vermaelen that weren't 100% focused on the job at hand. And now we don't have that, which is magnificent.
And one more tone setter that we should just flag again. And he's got so much praise lately, but it's Gabriel. I thought he was absolutely brilliant today. And he brings that level of aggression that, again, sets the tone for what's required.
If we're doing that, though, for me, Saliba, and I mean, it's a lovely... Saliba was unbelievable today. What a performance again. I mean, these are, and I don't want this to in any way be a negative thing, because it's not that, but these are the kinds of games where I start to... This is what nudges Saliba a little bit ahead of Gabriel for me. Gabriel was awesome today, but there's moments of calm that Saliba does stuff. It's just absolute class, and it makes people... They lose hope. He makes people lose belief when Colton Morris is out there going, "Oh, I'm going to run through and cause that." No, you're not on his level. And he just stamps everything out. So those two again, yet again, unbelievable. And you know, are the bedrock of everything we're doing right now.
Agree with all of that. All right, boys. That wraps up our on the whistle. We're going to be back at the weekend for Brighton. Johnny's going to be back tomorrow for a Patreon exclusive ratings. How spicy are they going to get? No one knows. And the only way that you can find out is you have to tune in. There, you won't find it on the internet. No one's allowed to talk about it. We'll have our cease and desisters out there capturing anyone that reveals the content of that. And if you're not on our Patreon and you listen to this free to air, patreon.com/TheArsenalOpinion. It's the only way to go. And if you like leaving reviews, because that's a little hobby that you have, you know, you leave it on the local cafe, the local bakery, why not leave a review for us? Just make sure it's 5-star. Okay, boys, anything else to add?
No, not too much. Had an awful week in Fantasy League because all these big teams are resting their players. Haaland out. Saka out. It's like, you know, it's very hard to judge who's going to be next, but that probably is, you know, indicative of how up and down this title race is going to be. Even the guys you're banking on, they might need to sit down because games are coming too frequently. So it's all still to play for.
I've got one AOB. Fucking Emery. Going to City and resting five players. I mean, did you see the state of that team? Absolute joke. Going for fourth and to rest that team, you're always going to get it handed to you. And it's just proof that Emery is a manager who, he's a fifth place manager, fourth, fifth place, but that is his level. I was disgusted when when I saw that thing come out. Absolutely disgusted.
And it just takes you back. And remember, remember those Arsenal fans that whined and whinged, and then he got exited, and then they whined and whinged that he was better than Arteta. Where are you now? That is not an Arsenal manager right there. That you're exactly right. He is very good at Europa League and getting teams to seventh in the league. That's what he's good at. That's where his history is at. He even lost the league title as a PSG manager. That just goes to show. No sleep lost over how I wrote about him back in the day. Absolutely deserved it. Knew he wouldn't give us a thing today, especially when he had an opportunity. I think they could, a top Aston Villa side could have got them today. But hey, we'll talk about that another day. All right, guys. On that note, we're going to say ciao for now. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow. The day after, the day after, the day after. It's podcast galore, let me tell you. Chill for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.